You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. If you gamble, use your game sense. Visit GameSenseAB.ca to find out more.
Ferguson, Marshall, tough first week for the Elks. There's no doubt about that. But was there? Did you see improved play on the field, or was there just a narrowing on the scoreboard?
I think it was a narrowing on the scoreboard more than anything else. I am impressed by the way that Nick Arbuckle, I genuinely believe, is pushing through whatever this is and continues to stay aggressive. Like, to me, if I were in his situation and all of the talk in the offseason of are they trying to trade him and how badly do they actually want him to be there, and okay, we can't get rid of him, but oh, it looks like he's running the offense pretty good, let's give him a shot in week one. Oh, look, it's a disaster and we're down by 20 before we can even blink in week one against the BC Lions. It's like he just keeps battling and fighting and throwing vertically and challenging defenses. And I'm impressed by the way that he continues to just not fold up and say, well, I guess I'll just hand it off to James Wilder Jr. and I guess I'll just throw checkdowns and we'll see where this thing goes. So I think if there's anybody that they can lean on in Edmonton moving forward here offensively, because obviously Chris Jones is a very defensive-minded guy, that's his focus. But offensively, if you're going to find any sort of leadership and something that you can rally around after going 0-2, I think guys in that room need to look at their leader and their quarterback and Nick Arbuckle and say, listen, he's not giving up. He continues to push through this thing. Why don't the rest of us follow suit?
Marshall, when you look at Nick Arbuckle, and obviously, you know, a lot of people in Edmonton saw what he did in Calgary back in 2019. Maybe didn't have the success he would have wanted with the Argos last year, but comes to Edmonton this year, he's the guy, in my opinion. No one else on the roster is going to be or should be taking playing time away from him. What does the coaching staff and the play calling have to do to really take advantage of his skill set?
It's a great question, and I think the biggest thing that jumped out to me in his time in Calgary was that he was an extremely efficient thrower of the football under 10 yards. But when I talked to Dave Dickinson after that offseason, because he was actually more effective in kind of like the 0 to 15 range than Bo Levi Mitchell was that year, and that was before the shoulder and the broken leg last season and all the rest, and he essentially came out of it and said, he might have been a little bit system limited. Like, we kind of had to call him into things that would allow him to be comfortable. Now, keep in mind, that was pre-pandemic. That was pre-trade to Ottawa, pre-move and free agency, if you want to call it that. It was essentially a trade for Matt Nichols to go over to Toronto, and then making the move to Edmonton. And I've talked to Nick a lot in the last couple of years about his want to develop more of a deep ball. Like, he really, I think, has a better understanding than people realize. The CFL game is going to force you to throw things vertically, and he's very okay with that. He's challenged himself to try and get better at that. And he spent a lot of time with Kenny Lawler in the offseason as well, attempting to try and get on the same page when it came to shooting the ball deep over the middle of the field, taking deeper drops and all the rest. So in terms of play calling and style, I mean, a lot of the RPO stuff, quick decision-making, quick slants, that's kind of the bread and butter, consistency underneath, lean on his football IQ moving forward. But I also think that he's trying to extend the field because he and the coaching staff, Steve McAdoo, the coordinator as well, can't get done what they want to this season if they are simply going to be throwing slants every single play, because then defenses start coming down and free safeties start looking for ways to jump routes and teams start scheming you up. So they have to show a variety of things, but I really do think it's got to be a mix and match of that RPO, slants, quick game, reading off of linebackers, and being able to take out of the shotgun a five-step drop and look down the field. And I mean, if you're paying Darrell Walker and Kenny Lawler what the Elks are, you sure as heck better be able to take a five-step drop and hit somebody on a deep shot over the middle.
We're talking to CFL with Marshall Ferguson from the CFL on TSN. Marshall, I want to go to the defensive side of the ball, of course. That is head coach Chris Jones' forte. And after week one, he made a lot of changes. By my count, at walkthroughs, there was five different starters or guys being moved around. Then Jake Ceresna placed on the sixth game, so he popped out. A lot of new faces in the starting lineup for the Elks defense on Saturday. What have you seen from that group, and should we just expect it to get better as it goes and as Chris Jones works with these guys?
This is a confusing one to me because Chris Jones, as you say, obviously defensive-minded, all the rest. They had more practices than anybody else. Like, and this is the thing that, in this situation, the way they looked in week one, I would typically come out of watching a team that played like that in week one. And Jones even said it himself in that BC debacle where he said, listen, we couldn't get lined up. We couldn't peel with the running back. We weren't gap sound. We were getting slashed here and there. It was like basically all of these basic fundamental things that you would expect a team that's had more practices than anybody to gel a little bit and come together. So I want to say, yeah, that they need some time together and they'll figure it out, but they've had more time together. And if you look around the league, like when a running back peels out of the backfield, the linebacker understands that that's his assignment, and then he runs with it. If it's a blitz and you end up having a quarterback that, like a great example, I sent out a clip today of Cody Fajardo, I think, is the most effective passer in the history of the Canadian Football League when he spins out to his left clean. And I see a pressure where they're shooting somebody right through the A-gap, right under the center, and yeah, it's a good look, and you're shooting through that gap, congratulations. Problem is, you didn't maintain contain to Cody Fajardo's left side, which the scouting report on him says he's going to spin out left 100 times out of 100 and take a shot down the field, and he's really, really dangerous when he does that. And so it's like, okay, if you understand that, if that's the scouting report, all it takes is the failure of a defensive end to not maintain contain, and all of a sudden the other direction, Saskatchewan scored 7 points, and it's a bit of a backbreaker from 28 yards out on second down. That's really disappointing. Like, that comes down to both coaching and execution and players understanding their roles and their assignments. So it's not one thing, and it's not a simple fix. And that I find to be really confusing when you have the staff that's been hired in Edmonton, because if there was anything I could bet on this year, it's that Edmonton, I would have said at the start of the season before I saw them in BC, would hold teams consistently to 15 to 20 points. And my question was whether or not they were going to get any sort of consistent scoring, because I just didn't know what the quarterback situation was going to be. Now it's starting to shake out where, okay, it's Arbuckle. You've got Lawler going a little bit. You're starting to find a little bit of a rhythm with the passing game, and James Wilder Jr.'s chipping in where he can. But the question is defense. It's not offense, and I could not have seen that coming just 2 weeks ago.
You mentioned James Wilder, and only 9 carries last game. Is that like mm-hmm. just what they ran into, or is that the I guess the plan, Marshall?
I think when I watch James Wilder Jr. run, and this is always the kind of the funny note of James, whether he was in Toronto or otherwise, is you look at his body and you look at his ability to gash downhill on an inside zone play, and he looks like he should be running for 150 yards every time he touches the football in a game, right? Like he looks like he should be ripping off 12 yards, 15 yards, 28 yards, 7 yards, 18 yards, just bang, 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 bang. And then he just never really gets into the flow of the game or the consistency. And typically guys like that, they need the ball a little bit more in order to get into that rhythm. And the CFL game just doesn't allow for that, like the 3 downs. But I kind of love that, right? Because I was joking with somebody the other day that, William, it was actually the game I was calling Winnipeg-Ottawa last Friday, where we were talking about William Powell and being out for the Red Blacks again and the fact that Devontae Williams was in. And I said, yeah, well, here's the thing. If Devontae Williams has 6 carries for 50 yards, that's a hell of a night for a running back in the Canadian Football League. And we kind of laughed. And I said, well, the reality is, like, as a CFL running back, usually, most of the time, you're not going to get 15 to 20 carries. So you got to make the most of your 8 to 12 carries, which sounds crazy, right? Like, guy goes through an entire offseason just abusing his body and getting prepared and strength and speed training for 8 to 12 touches a game, but you have to make the most of them. And I think more importantly, you have to make plays in the open field, making people miss with yards after the catch when you get your number called in the passing game. James hasn't done a whole lot of that this year either, so I don't know if that's him adapting to Stephen McAdoo's scheme. I don't know if that's a lack of connection with Nick Arbuckle. I'm not sure if he's getting used to some fresh bodies up front, but he's always a little bit underwhelming to me because I look at the way he plays and his mentality. He's aggressive. Like, he is a slashing, angry runner, and it always leaves me wanting a little bit more. And I'm sure there's people in Edmonton that feel the same when you see him, because you got this guy that looks like a superhero in a uniform, and you kind of want him to play like a superhero more often.
Marshall, one last question for you, and I'll open it up to the entirety of the CFL. I know it's only been 2 weeks, but after 2 weeks, the Western Division a record of 7-2. Out East, the combined record's 1-6. Do you expect that trend to continue with the West kind of being the juggernaut, or do you think the East will start to make it competitive as well?
I'm sure people will accuse me of Eastern bias on this one, guys, but I genuinely, when I look at the way the games unfold, and this is part of the reason why I love football, stuff's random. Like, a lot of the time, stuff is right. It's part of the reason why I've never had any interest whatsoever in sports gambling, just because I've always realized, like, you know, I see somebody say, oh, the over-under is 45.5. I go, well, yeah, but I mean, like, you know, it starts to pour all of a sudden, and a defensive back slips and falls down, and you go the other direction, and it's a touchdown on a pick six. It's like, well, I mean, these things can happen. So for me, the reason I bring up the randomness of football is that absolutely Montreal should have taken care of business against the Calgary Stampeders in week one and got a victory on the road. That would have been 1-0 for the East to kick off the year. Absolutely, the Hamilton Tiger Cats should have put away the Calgary Stampeders this past Saturday. They didn't do that. That would have been a second win. If the Ottawa Redblacks are even 50% effective in the score zone in their two games against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, they're probably 2-0, and the two-time defending champs are probably 0-2. So I'm looking at it and saying, yeah, the win-loss records. I saw Jeff Hamilton in Winnipeg tweet that out where he said, oh, it was a false narrative that was created by useless free agency signings in February that don't mean anything when we actually get out onto the field by the time the season kicks off. I thought, well, that's a fun narrative to push that, yeah, we all were wrong and all the rest, but the reality is you're a couple of kicks away and a couple of red zone, score zone opportunities away from this thing being completely flipped on its head and people going, wow, the West looks really bad this year. So I wouldn't read too much into the win-loss, even though that's why we play the games. I'm kind of looking at the process and saying these games, a lot of them have been coin flips. They've all been really, really close in score differential so far through the first 2 weeks here. So I think it's going to be competitive all year long, and it really comes down to who executes late in games. And Ottawa didn't do it, so Winnipeg is 2-0 for a reason, and the Calgary Stampeders are 2-0 for a reason against Eastern teams as well, because those Eastern teams did not finish down the stretch. But yeah, I think it's going to be real, real close.
Marshall, I really appreciate it. Enjoy the games this week.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.